Good afternoon. I wanted to put together an audio that covers the revived Revelation package. Back in the day, I helped create the Revelation package itself, and this is the revived one. And I call it that for a specific reason, because back in the day, we used a couple of theories, like, who are you? In other words, to the bank, who are you really? Who is this bank? What's really going on here? And the revelation was, because what we did is we uncovered what was really going on. And for all practical purposes, this entire package keeps the burden of proof on the bank. It's the bank's claim, it's the bank's allegation, and so on. It's the bank's contract, so to speak. So I did post up above a picture of what this package actually includes. And you can see it includes contract dispute, affidavit, demand for accounting, RESPA request. It does also include quiet title, motion to vacate for pre-existing issues, discovery packet, several judicial, Liz pendants, and cease and desist, and so on and so forth. And these documents are all built with the intention of giving you the ammunition you need to handle getting out of the banking system. And that's overall, to me, that's what I'm trying to do, is because the central banks globally are the demise of all people, and they just don't know it. The people are unwittingly allowing this to take place. And also, this package, I want to make sure that people understand this process is completely different than any discharge, okay? And what I mean by that is the revelation process proves there's nothing to discharge. It proves there's a void judgment. It proves that this is all one big sham trust. And if it's procedurally done correctly, you will see very positive results with it. I'll put it that way. Why? Because they have the burden to prove. And we connect all the dots that show how the administrative procedures rules, administrative process, actually applies to them. And it forces and compels both courts and banks to comply and to disclose and exposes what really took place. So you can see there's first is all the John Doe documents. I assembled all these documents, but I did the documents in a twofold manner. One, if you're in pressing issues right now, it's designed to help get these documents extracted from them under using the administrative process. Under the Administrative Procedures Act, any government agency has to produce documents and answer inquiries and so on and so forth. And what we do is we're showing you how these banks are actually quasi-government in order to compel them to do this. And the best way to do that, I've found, is to use the director of the original lending source, because that director of a bank actually took an oath, 12 U.S.C. 73. Other non-bank lenders, they're operating under HUD, and HUD laws are going to show the same thing. For example, 24 CFR 202 requires them to divulge the information. So it doesn't matter if they're a bank or a lender, who it is, but it will matter on these documents. So the documents are John Doe, and for example, we just use the bank because most people go to an actual bank for a loan. If you used a lender, i.e. just a mortgage provider, you're going to want to switch that section out for the 24 CFR 202. So the documents are not ready for you to file. They're ready for you to begin your quest. And your quest is to go through and gather as much evidence as you can. And hopefully here, I'm going to explain in particular this one document inside of here. You see at the bottom, it says it's a self-help revelation with full administrative process. That is a 16-page document that walks you through how, why, when, where, everything. It does it all. So put this package together after many years. I always take the approach that I never liked regular classroom schools. You dump 30 kids into a classroom and expect everyone to advance. You've got some that are far behind, some that are way ahead. The ones that are behind, they're going to be embarrassed. They're probably going to be class clowns. They're not going to pay any attention to. And the ones that are way ahead are going to be sleeping. They're not paying attention. You're not doing anything with them. So I myself personally, I put my three boys through Montessori school, because the first 2 weeks of school, they evaluate the child and they base the curriculum on the child. They don't try to conform the child to the curriculum. And that's what I think is wrong with public schools, is it's just conforming children to what you want them to believe based upon your curriculum, where taking the Montessori approach is, okay, where is this child right now educationally? And let's pick up from where they're at and advance them. So this takes that same approach where one side, if you need to get the information, these documents help you get the information. However, I myself prefer to do all of your research ahead of time. And in doing so, you're going to find all your HUD documents. You're going to find the securitization documents. You're going to find all these evidence that you can use to put in these documents and then send them out to the directors and let them know that you've already got the documents. So now they can't change the documents later. Or if they do, you can prove more fraud by, hey, these documents said this, but why do they now say this? It's something different. So you can catch them with that if you do everything in advance. You can do it either way, but I just prefer to do all my investigation up front. So to start out with this, again, the first four, contract dispute, affidavit, demand, and RESPA, those four are the administrative process. And I want to talk now about not banking, but just the administrative process, and specifically with the mortgages and loans. And I'm going to read right out of the 16-page document that is part of this package, by the way. And actually, I'll start out, it's $500. You can get the pack, all the John Doe documents that are listed here. No problem. You have to go through and tailor it to your specific situation. And there's anywhere between 12 and 15 different claims, causes of actions. So you have to go through and make sure that you can gather evidence. If you cannot evidence the claim or cause of action, remove that cause of action. If you find other claims that you can find and have evidence for, then add your claims to these. But this is going to give you a rock solid start, probably on issues that you're not even aware of that took place. So that's why I put this together, was to help those that are more advanced, just get the documents and you're underway. Those that are not quite so what I'll call judicially savvy, $50 an hour, I'm more than happy. Compensation for my labor, I'm more than happy to do that, jump in and help you put these documents together. If you do want consultation services that I can offer and compensate for that, then really just get a hold of me, and more than happy, just have ready at least your note in the deed or mortgage. And I'm not going to say your entire closing package, but at least your disclosure notices, and look for if there by chance is a servicer agreement. If there's a servicer agreement, and the disclosure agreements as well as the note and deed, we can talk about that more, but those are the documents that we really need to start a securitization audit. We also do have a third party actual licensed certified securitization auditor on hand if you would prefer to hire them to do the securitization, which I strongly advocate, because they will go through and find out all the nooks and crannies, all the assignments, transfers, allonges, everything in regards to it, and give you a professional certified audit report on your specific note. And we also have he has two packages. The first one is just the audit package report, and the other one is $2,500, I think it is, $2,599. And that gets you the security audit service, but it also gives you him appearing in court to be your witness, your expert witness. So that's the basics of this package. But I do want to go through and talk about the importance of the administrative process, because this is what has been missing since I started doing this way back in 2000, actually it's pre-2000, I started this in 97 or 98, one of the two, but anyways, I want to talk about the importance of the administrative process and how I've changed these documents now to incorporate what I was doing in the past that I wasn't doing currently, which is the administrative process. And the importance of the administrative process is it's foundational in disputes involving regulated entities like banks to resolve issues before escalating to litigation. In the context of bank matters, challenging a mortgage contract based on a sham trust and non-disclosure, lack of valid contract elements, or fiduciary breaches and relative violations, the administrative process is crucial for several different reasons. One, it establishes that you've taken a good faith effort to try to seek resolution before going to court. That's paramount. There was a good faith effort made. That's a requirement for courts, is that you at least tried to resolve this with them before going to court, hence contract dispute. It exhausts remedies required by law, and I want to amplify that very heavily. It exhausts remedies required by law. In a court, if you have not, or if a party, including you, have not exhausted your administrative remedies before court, they can and will dismiss the matter for failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. I'm sure you've all heard that before. That's why they do that, is because the administrative process was not done. In order for a lender, for example, to sue you in court, they have to send you a couple dunning letters. They have to say, hey, you're late. Hey, you're late. Hey, 90 days, I got to sue you. That is what they mean by the essential administrative process, trying to exhaust the remedies before court. So when they go to court, yes, we tried to, we let them know they were late, we let them know again 60 days, 90 days, we told them we're going to sue them, and now we're here. Now that shows the court that there was a good faith effort, that they tried to resolve it, and that they've exhausted their remedies, and now they have to bring you to court to resolve this contract dispute. And just to amplify, courts, civil courts that is, they have two general jurisdictions. One is tort claim, and two is a contract dispute. Outside of those two issues, please do not bring up anything that does not fall squarely within the contract dispute or a tort. The court cannot hear it. They don't have jurisdiction. This brings up all kinds of religious stuff, constitutional issues. None of that stuff matters. Federal enemies trading with it doesn't apply. It just doesn't apply because this is a simple contract resolution, contract dispute. That's all it is. Stay within the four corners. And the law actually says that contract disputes, the court has jurisdiction over that because the contract itself is the law in that issue. Anything outside of the contract is immaterial and will be ignored. But more importantly, unless the contract is confusing, ambiguous, or vague, the court cannot go outside the four corners of this contract. In other words, the plain language of a contract has to be honored. If there's ambiguity or dispute because it's vague, now the court can jump in and look at other court cases or laws outside of the contract for resolution. So keep in mind that the contract itself is the law. So look at your contract. Your contract makes you believe that you went and got a loan from a lender. You got a loan of exchange, but that's not necessarily what happened. So I'm going to get into more of that later. I just want to go on right now with the importance of this administrative process. So it establishes a record of good faith. It exhausts the remedies required by law, and it creates potential estoppel for acquiescence or agreements through non-response. And I'm going to hit on that harder, but the Administrative Procedures Act, connecting a bank via their oath, actually enforces this. So if you send things administrative process properly, it does require a response, and if they don't respond, now the court is shackled by the Administrative Procedures Act to treat it as though it is admitted. If you didn't do that stuff in court ahead of time before court, the court can't hear you. So what you do is you use the laws to force both the party and the court to do what they're supposed to do. And this is why I believe so many people are having problems out there, is because they're not exhausting the remedies. They're not trying to resolve these matters. They're not even disputing the contract. If you don't dispute the contract, then you can't ask the court to dispute it. The court isn't a party to that contract. The bank is. And if you never disputed before you got into court, then you're not going to get any remedy. How can the court resolve your contract dispute if you haven't disputed the contract? So that's what I mean by that, and that's what the court means by that. And the reason for that is because a court cannot compel contract. They can't force you in a contract. They can't force you out of a contract. But if you dispute a contract, the court has jurisdiction over contract disputes. What's your dispute? Well, we did this, we did this, we did this, we filed this, we filed this, we asked for this, we sent an affidavit. Now you've got an administrative record that there's an actual material, valid, ongoing dispute of this contract that the court needs to resolve. So that's basically what they mean by that. And it also positions you favorably for subsequent judicial actions, such as quiet title or complaint or motions to vacate any prior judgments. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to elaborate on the importance of these four documents, but the overall administrative process. I mentioned the exhaustion of remedies. Courts often require parties to exhaust remedy avenues before filing suit, particularly when federal statutes like Truth in Lending or RESPA are involved, because those laws provide mechanism for disclosure and dispute resolution. Failure to do so can and most likely will lead to dismissal for lack of ripeness or failure to state a claim. If you don't demand Truth in Lending and RESPA, you can't later go into a court and use it as an affirmative defense or a claim because you failed to state a claim. You haven't, the issue has not went through the administrative process and became ripe for adjudication, or you have failed to state a claim by stating that you've exhausted all your administrative remedies beforehand.